tuned for Lialogos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. Lialogos Radio with Michael Nevaralekis begins now.
Πόσο πολύ σ' αγάπησα, πόσο πολύ σ' αγάπησα, ποτέ δεν θα το μάθεις. Απ' τη ζωή, απ' τη ζωή, απ' τη ζωή μου πέρασες κι αλλάργεψες και χάθεις. Κάθω στα διαβατάρικα κι αγύριστα πουλιά. Πόσο πολύ σ' αγάπησα, ποτέ δεν θα το μάθεις. Δεν προσμένεις να με δεις, κι αν δεν προσμένεις να με δεις, κι εγώ πως θα ξανάρθεις. Κι εσύ του πρώτου όνειρου μου γλυκύτατη πνοή. Αιώνια θα το τραγουδώ, αιώνια θα το τραγουδώ, κι εσύ δεν θα το μάθεις. Πως οι στιγμές που μου δώσες αξίζουν μια ζωή. Πόσο πολύ σ' αγάπησα, ποτέ δεν θα το μάθεις.
We just heard Christos Thivaeus starting out our program today with Poso Poli Se Agapisa. This is the Dialogos Radio, the Greek radio program which bridges the worldwide Greek community and which is heard each week on 16 radio stations across 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. My name is Michael Navaradakis, and today on our program, the Dialogos interview series will be featuring an interview with well-known journalist, author, and documentary filmmaker Aris Hadzistefanou. Ari is a returning guest to our program, and in today's interview, interview, he will talk about a variety of timely and newsworthy issues, including the conflict in the Ukraine, where he recently had the opportunity to travel as part of a journalistic mission, the conflicts in the Middle East and in the Eastern Mediterranean, the precipitous decline in the freedom of the press in Greece in recent years, his recent documentary work, and his current projects. This is yet another last-minute schedule change for our program, as our interviews with Greek band Iman Bayli and with journalist and author Katie Martin will air on upcoming editions of our program. And after this interview, stay tuned for our Commentary of the Week segment, plus a special musical tribute to one of the foremost names in modern Greek music, Dimitra Galani. Coming up right now, though, here on Dialogos Radio is this week's edition of the Dialogos interview series and our interview with journalist and documentary filmmaker Aris Hadzistefanou. The Dialogos interview series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Dialogos Radio. Joining us today here on Dialogos Radio in the Dialogos interview series is journalist and documentary filmmaker Aris Hadzistefanou. And Ari, thank you first of all for joining us today.
Thank you for this invitation.
To get us started, recently you had the opportunity to travel to the Ukraine and to the separatist region of Donetsk on a journalistic mission. What were your observations from this visit and what was the climate like in these places?
Yeah, it was almost three weeks ago that in my capacity as a journalist, I followed the anti-fascist caravan, which was an initiative made by an Italian punk group called Banda Bassotti, to gather some people from Spain, Greece and Italy, and to try to reach the region of People's Republic of Donetsk in eastern Ukraine, to make some concerts there and to send a message of solidarity from the people of Europe. Unfortunately, we arrived at the borders of Russia and Ukraine at a moment where we had a heavy fight in around the airport of Donetsk. So it was practically impossible for a bus with 35, 40 people to enter into the People's Republic of Donetsk. So I managed to enter together with just a representative of this anti-fascist caravan. What we wanted to do there was to understand what is really happening, leaving aside the propaganda made by European Union or mass media in the United States, and of course the propaganda that we are listening from the Russian media. What we realize is that this is not a region totally controlled by Russia, as we often heard in mainstream media. We didn't see there the Russian soldiers carrying weapons or Russian heavy armored vehicles around the city. Of course, no one denies that Russia had played a significant role in organizing these militias, but what the first images that we had were common people like us that used to work as, you know, journalists or bakers or whatever, carrying weapons and saying that we are here to protect our region, to protect our new established country from fascism. And, you know, this sometimes sounds a little another form of propaganda to characterize your enemies as fascists, but in a way, I would agree with them, and I want to explain why. The past few months, the government of Ukraine, in Kiev, sent to these regions some of the neo-Nazi extremists of the right sector, the so-called right sector, which is actually a Nazi organization that was trained for the past few years. So these were the people that confronted the militias in eastern Ukraine, and I think they are right to say that this is a fight against fascism. Now, coming back to the characteristics of this new established state, usually I characterize it as a picture of surrealism, and I want to explain why this is happening. I've talked about common people taking weapons, but at the same time, we have some members of the old political and economic elite that are trying to take control of these militias and these forces. And one of the pictures that I still have in my mind was that we were invited by the leader of one militia to visit a monument of the Second World War created for the victims of the forces of Nazi Germany. So we arrived there and we realized that this was also a place that a huge fight took place, I think, in July of this year. So the monument was totally destroyed, but at the top of the hill you could see a flag with a communist flag, while at the same time the people of the militias were carrying images of Greek saints and of they call it the Madonna, actually, and they were praying for that. So you can understand all these different images, ideologies, political powers coming together to create this state. It will be interesting to see which of these powers will finally take control. It will be the public element of the militias, or it will be the old guard of oligarchs or other people. It's a very interesting story. I would say that I would finish that with something that a taxi driver was saying to us while we were leaving, going back to the borders with Russia, that we will not accept anymore what he characterized as the junta, the coup d'etat of the government in Kiev. We don't know, he said, if we will be a united country with Russia or if we will make a confederation of states in the region. But this was a critical point, and there's no way back to what we used to be just a few months or a few years ago.
Closer to home, we are seeing conflict throughout the Middle East, the Eastern Mediterranean, and increasingly closer to Greece's shores. We've seen the continuing violent conflicts in Gaza. We've seen everything that is happening with ISIS, the so-called Islamic State. We're seeing Turkey's military machine gearing up once again as well. From a geopolitical standpoint, what is your take on what is happening in the region, and where could all this lead to?
It's interesting to try to connect, first of all, what is happening in Ukraine and the new Cold War between United States and Russia with what is happening in the Middle East. At the end of the day, I would say that this is a game for the control of energy corridors and actually the economic control of Europe. And why I'm saying that? Because I believe that Washington and State Department at the moment would like to see a new confrontation inside Ukraine that would cut the flow of natural gas from Russia coming to Europe. And we all know what will happen in that case. Europe will have to look to the Middle East, to countries and regimes that are almost totally under the control of the United States. So this new climax in international affairs in the eastern part of Europe and in the Middle East, I think they have something in common. Of course, don't forget that Russia has one of its biggest naval bases in Syria, and that was one of the reasons that the United States was, in my opinion, so aggressive against the regime of the Assad in Syria. Now, we have, of course, other points of climax of violence, especially in Eastern Jerusalem, but I wouldn't like to connect these two stories. In my opinion, what is happening there, it's a new wave of provocation from Israel, the same provocations that we have seen in the year 2000, where the Second Intifada emerged because of these provocations of the religious beliefs and the ability of the Arabs of the regions to visit some of the holy sites in Eastern Jerusalem. And Of course, the third most important element at this region, it's the appearance of ISIS, the Islamic State. But here, I think that we have what I characterize as a Frankenstein case. Remember what happened in Afghanistan a few decades ago when the United States supported the movement of Mujahideen against the Soviet Union at that time, and then they created a monster of extreme Islamists fighting against Western countries. It was these forces that created the Taliban movement and afterwards the Osama bin Laden, and we all know what followed that. I'm afraid that the same thing happened with the ISIS in Syria and Iraq. We all know now that countries like Saudi Arabia, with Jordan, with the support of Turkey, and of course under the command of CIA and other secret services of United States, were supporting extremists, Islamist extremists in these regions. And in my opinion, that was the basic point after which ISIS was created. I don't want to underestimate the power of ISIS, but we always should look at the bigger picture. And this bigger picture says that they have something around 30,000 fighters. But if you compare them even with the Peshmerga, the Kurdish fighters in northern Iraq, if you compare them with the Turkish army, if you compare them with the presence of the United States and other forces in the region, I think that is a phenomenon that can be controlled. It won't be easy, but it can control. In my opinion, the Western media are overemphasizing the danger from ISIS in order to support the new presence of Western military forces in the region. And we have seen in the past few days that the Obama administration sent 1,500 soldiers. They call them analysts or whatever, but we understand that it's a new force in Iraq. And in my opinion, by playing, by overemphasizing the presence of ISIS, they also want to support these new initiatives.
We are on the air with journalist and author Aris Hadzistefanou here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos Interview Series. And Ari, speaking specifically about Turkey, we've seen Turkish exploration ships violating Greek and particularly Cypriot maritime waters, and the Turkish government is making threats against Greece and Cyprus in the event that these countries declare an exclusive economic zone and begin explorations for oil and gas. What might Turkey be thinking at this time? Do you believe that they are thinking war, or are they simply looking for a distraction from other conflicts and issues that they are facing?
I think it is a combination of distraction and at the same time trying to explain to Greece and Cyprus that we are here, we have some different views as far as the territorial sea and the way that each country has the right to take control of its oil and natural gas. This is something that is happening for many decades now. Turkey, from time to time, has this aggressive face against its neighbors, trying to impose its ideas about international law. We should always forget that. Of course, we should not just stay idle and wait for Turkey to start a new confrontation. There are many diplomatic means in the European Union and in the international community that Cyprus and Greece should follow. On the other hand, we should not let these incidents be hijacked by the governments of these two countries as a distraction from the economic and social problems that they are facing. You know, during times of crisis, governments very easily try to create this nationalistic atmosphere in order to distract the media and the population from the real problems. We have seen this happening many times. Just remember the confrontation between Argentina and United Kingdom with the Falkland Islands and all these relevant stories. Now, this is the one part of the story. The other, as you said, is a distraction from the problem that Turkey is facing to the southern borders, and especially with the Kurdish population in the region. And at the same time, in my opinion, it's very interesting, and we should never forget that there is a deterioration in the relations between Ankara and Washington. And this is probably one of the reasons that the Turkish military and political elites are trying to create new tensions in other parts in order to distract also these people from looking at the southern borders and what is happening there.
To change topics, an issue which you have spoken extensively about is the declining freedom of the press and the media in Greece. We've seen in the past couple of years in particular Greece's precipitous decline in the rankings of organizations such as Reporters Without Borders and Freedom House. What are conditions like for journalists and for journalism at this time in Greece, and what are the main causes, in your view, of this decline?
You know, we used to characterize the Greek media landscape as the North Korea of Europe, and it was a kind of joke, but I'm afraid that it won't be a joke for many years. As you said, we have seen in the past few years, during the austerity period in Greece, that the freedom of press has deteriorated in that level that we've lost 50 positions, 50 seats in the index of freedom of press that Reporters Without Borders produce every year. So now we are at point 99, which means that we have many dictatorships or kingdoms or countries that used to have a civil war just a few years ago, and they have better and more viable freedom of press in their countries. Why this is happening? In my opinion, because the Greek media are totally controlled by few families that at the same time control the economy of Greece. These families control construction companies, they are the big ship owners, they have oil companies, and they want to impose this austerity hand in hand with the Greek government, the IMF, and the European Commission. So in order to do that, they cannot just do it with the state, the police, or everything else that was trying to control the reaction of the public the past few years. They have to control the mass media, and that's what is happening. Fortunately for us, at the same time, we managed to create some other media that are controlled by journalists. Take, for example, the Efimerida των Συντακτών, which is the Journal of the Editors, which is controlled by journalists and try to have an alternative view on current affairs, or some magazines like Unfollow, which again was created by its own journalists and technicians and editors. The problem is that for common people, that they have to work something like 10 or 12 hours just to survive, and they are coming back at their houses and sitting in their living rooms. The only solution for them is just to open the television. That's the last power that they have for understanding what's going on. And of course, if you just open the television, you will just listen to the mainstream propaganda, to what the government and these Greek oligarchs have to say.
We are on the air with journalist and documentary filmmaker Aris Hadzistefanou here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. And Ari, let's talk for a bit about some of your recent projects, particularly your most recent documentary, Fascism, Inc. Tell us a few words about the documentary, its production, and about the story that it tells.
Fascism, Inc. is our third documentary after Detocracy and Katastroika. All these three documentaries were created and funded by a crowdfunding operation. We, from the first moment, we said that we will not accept a single euro from politicians, political parties, or big corporations, but we want our viewers to be our co-producers. So we started with Detocracy, explaining the characteristics of the debt crisis, trying to explain that we are not a lazy nation, but that here we have a structural problem of not only of the Eurozone, but of the world financial system. We moved to Katastroika, where we predicted that the second step of attack against the Greek population would be to privatize everything, to try and destroy the public sector and give the most profitable corporations to the to some oligarchs, actually. Either they are coming from Greece or abroad, there's no difference for the population of this country. And we wanted to explain that they cannot do that if they don't attack simultaneously the democracy of Greece. And it was, if you remember, the time where we had the first non-elected prime minister, Mr. Lucas Papadimos, in the same way that in Italy they had Mario Monti, and we all remember what was happening a few years ago in the European Union. Now, the third documentary, Fascism Inc., we're trying to explain that if the economic elites feel threatened and they feel that the political establishment cannot help them anymore in the way that it used to do it after the end of the dictatorship in Greece, they might want to put on the table the what we characterize as the card of fascism. We have seen the same thing happening in the 20s and 30s with Mussolini in Italy and Hitler in Germany, when the political establishment was not able to control the reaction of the people, and when they wanted to create a right-wing massive movement, they played with fascism, and we all know today the consequences. We believe that the same thing, in a smaller scale, of course, happened in Greece in 2012-2013, when the political establishment and the mass media actively promoted Golden Dawn, the Nazi group in Greece. So we wanted to explain in our documentary this connection between the economic interests of some groups of the society with the rise of fascism in history and in today. So we start from Italy of the 20s to arrive to Greece of 2014 and Europe, of course, of 2014.
What other projects are you working on at the present time?
One of the projects that was created after our latest documentary, Fascism Inc., was what we characterize as the anti-fascist encyclopedia. The first step was to take the interviews that we had for the documentary, which was many hours of recorded interviews that we couldn't use, of course, in the documentary, and make a video Q&A. So we have some very basic questions, and we have academics, journalists, or historians that they are trying to give an answer to that. For example, we can ask, was Hitler crazy, as the mainstream media and the mainstream historiography is saying in Western countries, or he was an instrument of some in order to promote some economic interests? Who were the people who collaborated with the Nazis during the German occupation of Greece, and what they are doing today? Are these families forgotten, or are they controlling right now the country? So we try to give answers to these basic questions, but at the same time we are also preparing some new articles and some new booklets that will be part of this anti-fascist encyclopedia.
At this point, we would like to take the opportunity to remind our listeners that Dialogos Radio's fall fundraiser is in progress, and we wanted to take this opportunity before wrapping up the interview to thank you for your own support of our program, as you have provided us copies of two of your documentaries, Fascism Inc. and Katastroika, which we are offering as gifts for listeners who make a donation.
Thank you very much again for this invitation to your radio show.
Adi, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today here on Dialogos Radio. Attention iTunes users, Dialogos Radio is now just a click away. You can now download our podcasts and listen to Dialogos Radio 24/7 anytime, anywhere. Check us out today in the iTunes podcast directory and in iTunes Radio. That was this week's edition of the Diálogos interview series here on Diálogos Radio, and our interview with journalist, author, and documentary filmmaker Aris Hatzistefanou. As with all of our interviews, the podcast of this interview will soon be available on our website, dialogosmedia.org, where you can also find our on-demand programming, our articles, and listen to our online radio station, Diálogos Radio 24/7. Our podcasts are also available in the official Diálogos Radio apps for Android, Kindle, and BlackBerry devices, and for Google Chrome, and in iTunes, TuneIn.com, the Windows Marketplace, and in the Nobex Radio, WeCast, and Player FM apps. We'll get back to some great Greek music now here on Diálogos Radio, and coming up after that is our commentary of the week, plus our special musical tribute to Dimitra Galani.
Και βουρκωμένη ακουαρέλα που πουλιέται να μπαρά. Ύστερα έγινε μια νύχτα μεθυσμένη, με το φεγγάρι να τρελαίνει τα νερά. Η ματιά σου ανοίγει δρόμους, ο καπνός στείνει εμπόδια. Θα ρωτήσω τα τραγούδια και θα έρθω με τα πόδια. Πεινασμένος σαν το λύκο και αξίριστος για μέρες, θα με στήσουνε στο τοίχο της αγάπης σου οι σφαίρες. Πεινασμένος σαν το λύκο και αξίριστος για μέρες, θα με στήσουνε στο τοίχο της αγάπης σου οι σφαίρες. Μάκι και με ρίξει βέλωνα στα χειρά και σπίθα στο σωρό, τότε του μπάρμαν η πετσέτα θα στραγγίξει όλα τα δάκρυα και θα έρθω να σε βρω. Η ματιά σου ανοίγει δρόμους, ο καπνός τίνει εμπόδια. Θα ρωτήσω τα τραγούδια και θα έρθω με τα πόδια. Πεινασμένος σαν το λύκο και αξίριστος για μέρες, θα με στήσουνε στο τοίχο της αγάπης σου οι σφαίρες. Πεινασμένος σαν το λύκο και αξίριστος για μέρες, θα με στήσουνε στο τοίχο της αγάπης σου οι σφαίρες.
Do you enjoy independent, non-commercial, non-profit radio programming which brings you the best in Greek music and culture, plus exclusive and hard-hitting interviews you won't hear anywhere else? If so, then Diálogos Radio needs your support. Contribute to our fundraiser and help us to continue bringing you more of the programming you love. And in return for your contribution, check out our special gifts, including DVDs, music, books, and much more, available in return for your donation. Visit our website, dialogosmedia.org, to learn more. Support a nonprofit and independent Greek voice. Support Dialogos Radio today.
We just heard Yannis Kotsiras here on Dialogos Radio with Θα ρωτήσω τα τραγούδια. And coming up right now here on Dialogos Radio is our commentary of the week.
Dialogos Radio's commentary of the week. Each week, Michael Nevradakis provides views and opinions on issues pertaining to Greece and to the worldwide Greek community. Coming up next here on Dialogos Radio.
Earlier this year, it was announced that Greece has continued a trend which began a few years ago at the start of the economic crisis by sliding even further down the International Freedom of the Press rankings compiled by two different international watchdog organizations, Freedom House and Reporters Without Borders, with Greece falling to 92nd place in the world in the Freedom House ranking and to 99th place in the Reporters Without Borders ranking. And while this precipitous decline does represent the alarming increase in arrests and violence toward journalists in recent years, this does not represent the whole story. For those who think that corruption, censorship, and lawlessness only appeared in the Greek media landscape in recent years, the historical record proves otherwise. Newspapers in Greece were long the realm of major business, shipping, and banking interests who operated these newspapers not because they were profitable, because they weren't, but as a means of pressuring the government of the day and as a means of controlling and manipulating public opinion. This situation did not change with the launch of private broadcasting in the late 1980s. The first non-state-owned radio stations belonged to municipalities where mayors from the opposition at the time, Nea Dimokratia political party, were elected. These stations were opened for political reasons to provide an opposing voice to the governing PASOK government at the time. Soon thereafter, the first privately owned radio and television stations began to broadcast, in most cases illegally, owned by the same major financial and shipping interests as the country's newspapers. Antenna TV, for instance, one of the country's largest private television stations to this day, began broadcasting in late 1989 without any license whatsoever. Indeed, throughout the 1990s, most radio and television stations which went on the air did so without a license, simply because licenses were never issued. In 2001, however, riot police stormed and forced off the air 66 radio stations in the Athens area, falsely claiming that the operation of these stations would endanger flight safety at the new Athens International Airport. While the stations which were licensed in the first and only licensing bid which was ever completed for radio stations in Greece belonged, by and large, to major business and financial interests, municipalities, and the church. Indeed, one church-owned radio station was allowed to remain on the air even though it itself did not receive a license. In 2002, a law meant to ban illegal video gambling machines was written and enforced in such a broad manner that arcades and internet cafes were often forced to shut down. In 2006, as blogs began to become a significant and popular source of news and information for many Greek citizens, a blogger was arrested and charged with libel simply because his blog contained links to another website where the allegedly libelous content was actually located. In 2010, another blogger and journalist, Stamatis Gioias, was murdered execution style outside his home in Athens, purportedly by a terrorist group which, since this murder, has not been heard from again. No arrests have ever been made in connection with the murder of Gioias, who operated Greece's most popular news blog at the time, Toroktiko. In recent years, we've seen the arrest of journalist Kostas Vaksevanis on charges stemming from his publication of the Lagarde list of over 2,000 alleged tax evaders from Greece with Swiss bank accounts. And after Vaksevanis was initially acquitted, prosecutors retried Vaksevanis on the same exact charges, though ultimately he was again acquitted. We've seen the arrest arrest and issuance of a suspended jail sentence to blogger Yeron Pastitsios simply for operating a satirical Facebook account targeting deceased Greek monk and cult icon Elder Paisios. We've seen numerous incidents of violence directed toward journalists. In one incident in 2011, for example, a journalist covering a protest in Athens lost his hearing after riot police threw a stun grenade directly at him. Journalists were fired from their posts at National Public Broadcaster ERT and at the Athens News Agency after daring to question government policies. Journalists at the Athens News Agency were, earlier this year, forced by the government to alter the press release issued by the German embassy in Greece on the occasion of Angela Merkel's official visit to Greece to remove any reference of austerity. This is a landscape where broadcasting and media are dominated by a handful of very powerful shipping and business magnates. For instance, private television network Mega Channel, the Dambrakis publishing group of newspapers, and private television network Star Channel are each shareholders in each other's parent corporations. While the six largest private television stations have jointly formed a conglomerate known as Digia, which was granted a nationwide digital television broadcast monopoly at a price totaling about 2% of the actual estimated value of this nationwide network. These are the same major television and media outlets which each owe over 100 million euros in unpaid taxes to the Greek state, but which lecture Greek citizens every day in their newscasts and in their newspapers about how they should tolerate and accept an insane, regressive tax system which is bankrupting millions of households nationwide. But wait, there's more. The terms of the members of the National Radio Television Council, the administrative body which regulates broadcasting in Greece, expired 2.5 years ago, yet these same individuals remain in their positions today, with the authority to shut down radio and television stations and to issue fines, despite the fact that their own positions are now illegal and have been confirmed as such by two separate rulings by Greece's Council of State, the country's highest administrative court. This is the same Radio Television Council which fined a television station in Greece for broadcasting SpongeBob SquarePants, apparently because they believed that SpongeBob was gay. And of course, we have the forced illegal shutdown of National Public Broadcaster ERT in June 2013, a shutdown which was passed by legislative decree and which was never ratified by the Greek parliament and which, therefore, is legally invalid. ERT's replacement, Nerit, has been rocked by one scandal after another, by numerous allegations of patronage and economic mismanagement, while its leadership has changed at least 3 times in less than 1 year. This is just a taste of the media landscape in Greece today, under the supposedly responsible and pro-European government of Nea Dimokratia and PASOK, the two political parties which have alternated their rule of Greece for the past 40 years. These are the political parties which the European Union supports, and which the international press told us, when they were elected in 2012, were the best thing that could happen for Greece at this time. This is a situation which has been ongoing for decades, and which can only change with a boycott of these outlets, which have contributed to the political corruption in Greece, the destruction of the country's economy, and the dumbing down of Greece's population. Whether it is Mega Channel, Antenna TV, Ikathimerini, Inda.gr, or the many other outlets operated by this group of thieves and gangsters, the best thing anyone could do is to shut them off and to hit them in the only place where they have any feelings whatsoever, their wallet. As for the full background regarding this sorry state of affairs, our 8-article investigative series regarding the long history of corruption, lawlessness, and censorship in Greece's media landscape is available on our website, dialogosmedia.org.
Take Dialogos Radio on the go with you with the new Dialogos Radio app for Android devices. Now you can listen live to Dialogos Radio and Dialogos Radio 24/7, download our podcasts, and read our latest articles all in our free Android app, available now in the Google Play Store.
We just heard the commentary of the week here on Dialogos Radio, and coming up now is our special musical tribute to one of the biggest names in Greek music of the past few decades, Dimitra Galani. Born on the 14th of November 1952, Dimitra Galani's musical career dates back to the late 1960s, when two of her songs were included in the album titled Ena Hamoyelo, with music composed by Limos Moutsis and lyrics based on the poetry of Nikos Gatsos. Her career truly took off in the 1970s and 1980s, however, during which time she had the opportunity to collaborate with some major names in Greek music, including Stavros Xarchakos, Manos Hadzidakis, Yannis Panos, Vasilis Tsitsanis, Mikis Theodorakis, Vangelis Papathanasiou, and Manos Loizos, among others. In 1976, Galani performed in the United States and Canada for the first time, while throughout the 1980s, she had the opportunity to perform live in a number of countries throughout Europe, North America, and Australia. In 1980, along with Italian singer Riccardo Cocciante, she won first place in the French music festival Rose d'Or, while in 1990, she began composing music for the first time as well, and also represented Greece in the 7th Festival of Mediterranean Music in Mallorca, Spain. Her musical career continues to the present day as she continues to work with some of the most marquee names in Greek music, and continues to produce new albums as well. We'll hear two of her most emblematic songs coming up now, as part of our special musical tribute here on the Alagos Radio.
Την αρχή σηκώσει. άγχος με δίνε μου το πιο θλιμμένο όπα. Να στο γυρίσω μια στροφή με σώμα ευγενικό. Κι αν είναι από το είναι μου και από την καρδιά που το πα. Να γίνει αγάπη προσευχή και στάχτη το κακό. Στα χείλη την πρώτη ουσία, την αρχή. Σηκώστε με να δω. Όχι από περιέργεια, μα δεν χωράω στην ύλη. Για τούτη ψεύτρα η εποχή την έχει για Θεό. Ατομική μου ενέργεια για να σα μου στα χείλη την πρώτη ουσία. Σηκώστε με να δω. Όχι από περιέργεια, μα δεν χωράω στην ύλη. Και τούτη ψεύτρα η εποχή την έχει για Θεό.
The long and corrupt history of lawlessness, patronage, and censorship in the Greek media is revealed in our new series of investigative articles. Visit dialogosmedia.org today to read our investigative series and to learn more about the long-standing state of corruption and censorship in Greece's media, as well as the worsening conditions for freedom of speech and the press. Head on over to dialogosmedia.org today to read our articles and to get more of the hard-hitting journalism you've come to expect from Dialogos Media. Follow Dialogos Radio on Facebook and Twitter and remain connected to all our latest news and updates. Check us out today at facebook.com/dialogosmedia and at twitter.com/dialogosmedia. We just heard two songs by Dimitra Galani as part of our special musical tribute here on Dialogos Radio. The song which we just heard was titled Atomiki Mou Energia, while right before that we heard Mimou Milasia Agapi. This is Dialogos Radio, the weekly radio program which airs on 16 radio stations across 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. Today's program is just about ready to come to a close, but we will be back again next week, same time, same place, featuring an interview with well-known Greek band Iman Baildi, who will talk about their music and latest album, their recent tours across North America and Europe, and who will announce some big news that is of particular interest to our listeners in the United States and Canada. That is coming up next week as part of the Dialogos interview series here on Dialogos Radio. We'll wrap up today's program and our special musical tribute to Dimitra Galani with one final song, featuring Dimitra Galani along with Dimitris Mitropanos and Dimitris Bousis with their live version of Dedes Kuvenda. Thank you for joining us again this week here on Dialogos Radio, and have a wonderful weekend.
Διέξοδο γυρεύοντας μια λιώτικη ζωή. εικόνα σου και πάλι απ' την αρχή. Ψάχνω για μια διέξοδο γυρεύοντας μια λιώτικη ζωή.
Και το κουμένο